stocks, bonds, ETFs, straight out of downtown Chicago. This is Zach's Market Edge.
Welcome to Zach's Market Edge, the podcast about investing in your life. This is Tracy Reinick, and I'm your host this week again. And I'm joined by Kevin Cook, Zach's senior strategist and editor for The Tactical Trader. He was here last January, and we had a very interesting discussion about the stock market sell-off at that time and what you should do and should you be panicking and all that kind of stuff. So I thought it was fitting that he's coming back here now that we're at, you know, all-time highs just 6 months later. It's like the exact opposite scenario, but I'm getting asked the same questions. What should I do now? Should I be panicking? You know, our stocks, have they risen too much? Should, you know, is there a bubble? All this other questions.
It's the flip side question. Like, I'm scared to buy at all-time highs.
Right.
You know, what should I do with my money?
Right. So we're going to discuss all of these things because I know, you know, everybody has these same concerns. I've seen the all-time high thing, Kevin, over and over and over again. I actually posted in my value investor service just a week ago, a chart that I saw on StockTwits that someone cleverly made up of the Dow Industrials starting back in 1900, because it's the oldest of the big indexes. And it basically showed it going from, you know, the very beginning all the way to where we are now, which is the new highs. And along the way, he kept repeating, this is the top. Oh, this is the top. It can't go any higher. You know, the doom is coming. Right. And then there was the big sell-offs. You had the Great Depression one. And then they would say, like, this is it. We told you it would happen. And then, of course, it kept, you know, it rebounded. It did take 26 years that time to go back to the former all-time highs, but then it kept breaking out. And then, you know, there was the 2008 sell-off again. Everyone's like, see, it's over now, but here we are again.
Yeah, and this goes back to some of the things that we talked about in January, that it's easy to get caught up in the sky is falling and, you know, the dollar's going to crash, the dollar's going to 5,000. You hear these guys out here, Mark Faber, Peter Schiff, and all these guys. But you need to stand back and look at the American economy. Yes, the American economy sort of got broken in 2008, you know, by Wall Street shenanigans, but look how quickly it repaired itself. The American economy is fundamentally strong, and there is tremendous wealth underneath it. So, to think that, really, the investing bet is, yes, you always want to buy the big dips, and that's what we talked about in January. You want to be buyers of those dips for the long term. We weren't talking about a trading philosophy. We were saying, hey, are you building a portfolio, and is that money that's invested for 10 years? Yeah, you want to be buying.
So people are always telling me, you know, about this topic. It always comes up on StockTwits, and I always tell them, you know, don't bet against America, because that, you know, there's just huge earnings potential there, and the companies, you know, they know what they're doing, and as we're seeing, but it hasn't been that good the last couple of quarters, the actual earnings of these companies.
Right. I mean, we're still technically in an earnings recession. You know, we've had multiple quarters back to back of negative growth. So we weren't expecting Q2 to be great. And so we already know we shouldn't be overwhelmed. We know the bars are going to be lowered and the companies can jump over them. So what we're really interested in is what's the guidance.
Right.
But what's been surprising here in the past week is that the banks came out strong. You know, the four big banks, you know, JP Morgan, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, you know, they came in strong. So that gave a boost to a market that had already recovered, you know, off the Brexit correction lows. My thing is, though, you know, I've been bearish for a while here this year as the market surged back up. And so we get the Brexit correction, which I thought was fitting. And I thought there were a lot of other potential storms this summer with the Fed threatening to raise, the election, you know, possible trouble in China. And, you know, then the market surges back. But even before the Brexit correction, I did this video, the math of S&P 2200, because as somebody who was bearish, I still had to look at the equation of how stocks can go higher. And there's several elements to it. Anybody can go on the Zach site and just search the math of S&P 2200, or just type in math 2200, and you'll see this video I did, and there's an article too, where I explain something called the equity risk premium. And basically, that's just the difference between what's the earnings yield on stocks and what are bond yields. And that is juicy enough that it keeps driving money into the stock market. Institutional investors look at their models, they look at their cash, and they're like, we have to put money in stocks because we can't buy any more government bonds with those low yields. And even though we're in an earnings recession, there is still earnings growth. you just have to look for it. You have to find your industry, your sector, and they are forced to put that money to work as long as the market's not terribly expensive. You know, we're not trading at 18 or 19 times forward earnings, but, you know, we're trading at 16, 17 times forward earnings and getting more expensive. But that's not too expensive as long as central banks are keeping interest rates super low and keeping bond yields down. Money will get driven into the stock market. And that's why I had to acknowledge, yeah, the S&P could go to 2,200 this summer, even though I don't think it should because of the earnings recession.
So you're not concerned, it doesn't sound like, about valuation, because I get that question all the time. Like, it's so expensive.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's not so expensive. So let's say that the S&P is going to earn $115 this year. You know, at S&P 2100, that's still a reasonable mid-teens valuation. And even at S&P 2200, it's not out of this world. But it's all about, what forward multiple do you pay for the market when the earnings are still headed down? You know, so if we're looking at another quarter of negative growth, then do you pay 17 times for that market? I say no, but the math of S&P 2200 is all about the equity risk premium that large investors will. They have, you know, that we use this, the acronym TINA. TINA stands for there is no alternative. and that's really what it is for global investors who can't buy any more government bonds at those yields, and they can't stay in cash. There is no alternative but U.S. equities that have some growth.
I also feel like people believe that the market is so expensive because they're in a lot of these big cap names that have really had big run-ups, mm-hmm. and they've had good earnings, but they're not cheap anymore. A lot of the Dow industrial stocks, the old line names, are trading really high. Like, I looked at a couple that just reported today. Johnson & Johnson is one of them. They're among the cheaper ones. They're trading at 18 times right now. They did guy higher for the year. So that was, everything was great about their report. They're hitting all time highs. But again, 18 times, that's not cheap. Then I looked at.
People are hiding out there, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's your big cap. You know, it's pharma,
right?
It has that
right.
appeal, right? And they're very diverse.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it is the bluest chip of pharma.
Totally. And that was the area that really boosted the quarter too. I guess revenues in that area were up 9% year over year. But I looked at Lockheed Martin, another like crazy high flyer, and they're trading at almost 22 times. They also beat and raised. And, you know, so that will go down a little bit there.
Yeah, Lockheed Martin, I mean, that's a story. That's kind of a momentum story because they're executing so well. I recommended it for a Zacks Confidential report like 2 years ago. And I said, this is a safe blue chip to buy because of what they're doing with technology, not just defense. And now it's got this life of its own that it can trade at a 22 multiple. It's pretty interesting.
IBM also reported this week.
Yeah.
What about them?
IBM, this is a story I've been following closely because I'm really interested in what they're doing with big data and Watson and Bluemix. Bluemix is their developer platform. So they put tools online for developers to build applications. And there's a degree of open source to it. So IBM is still trying to reinvent itself. You know, they've gone from this, you know, hardware company to a services company to a software company to now they're in the cloud, in the open source world. And really having to adapt fast because you've just seen their revenues plummet in the past 4 years. They had a revenue peak in 2012 of $107 billion. This year, they're going to do $80 billion. And the forecast is still they're just going to do $80 billion next year. So they're still in this reinvention process. And investors, the stock has declined. Warren Buffett was a buyer at $175. It goes to $225. And now we're back here at $150. But investors are giving IBM some slack here because of these new technologies that they're innovating with and adapting to the cloud and services, and because the multiple is cheap. You know, it's 12 times, so it's more reasonable.
Yeah, that's a big difference. And that is one of the few we've talked about so far today that isn't at its all-time high. So
right.
It sounds like investors should really be looking for, you know, these certain opportunities. And maybe don't chase the huge momentum stocks, but look around.
Definitely. You've really got to do some stock screening. And on Zacks.com, we have, you know, screens that you can use to just, you know, tailor something. What are you looking for? Are you looking for big caps? Are you looking for small caps? Is growth more important than valuation? Do you need it to be profitable? And what kind of earnings growth do you want? What kind of revenue growth do you want? So you can screen for all these things. And that's really what investors need to do right now. You know, if it's 10-year money, yeah, you can just keep dollar cost averaging. But if you're a stock picker, you've really got to do your homework. You know, that's we always talk about that when we do our quarterly thing on the hedge funds and what they're buying is that, hey, a lot of these guys are heads down picking stocks, but it takes research.
What about the small caps? Because we just talked about the bigs, but the smalls have not broken out to all-time highs quite yet.
As an index, right?
Right.
But there are tremendous small cap opportunities. You know, so that's where you've got to do your research. You know, you've got to look at what industries do you like? What sectors do you like? Do you want to be in technology? Do you want to be in healthcare? And then, you know, what's more important to you? You know, the earnings growth, the revenue growth, and, you know, the size of that industry, that kind of thing. So that's where the research, where you really have to get busy with research is and being a stock picker because, yeah, even while the Russell 2000 small cap index doesn't seem like it's going to surge to new highs, well, maybe, you know, don't focus on that index. Focus on the stocks you want to buy.
Okay. You were mentioning, you know, the difference with the yields, and that's why people are going back into stocks mm-hmm. versus bonds. What about those dividend stocks? Should I really be looking for that? I mean, I did look at Johnson & Johnson. That, you know, is that, it's crazy all-time highs, but you are getting a 2.6% yield there.
Yeah.
But it's not bad.
I look at a lot of Bank of America, Merrill Lynch research that I get, and they published a chart showing that the percentage of S&P 500 stocks with a dividend yield above the 10-year treasury is approaching a peak that we rarely see. And that's 60% of S&P 500 stocks have a dividend yield higher than the 10-year treasury. Now, that doesn't seem unreasonable. That's what you would look for, right? But, you know, that's how money is being driven there. And, you know, even the top strategists are confused right now. I always try and pull quotes from top strategists at Fidelity and BlackRock. The guy from BlackRock said the other day, Larry Fink, last week, he said, the market should not be at all-time highs. Well, okay, so he's looking at the whole market. But it doesn't mean you can't be a stock picker and win for the long term. You know,
right.
Look at companies like Mobileye. They make the cameras for cars and autonomous driving. I'm, you know, always liked that stock. And it's just surged lately. Ambarella is a chip stock I like. They make the video processors. They have a proprietary algorithm for processing high-definition video and compressing the file that nobody else is doing. And that's a stock I'm like, you want to buy the stock while it's got a market cap under $2 billion because somebody's going to take them out. We just had a big semiconductor merger this week. SoftBank buys Arm from the UK because the pound got so cheap and made that company cheaper. But that trend of semiconductors, there's still going to be that appetite. I own Broadcom Avago. They want to go out and buy somebody. So I also picked up Ambarella because I think somebody's going to buy this company while it's trading under a $2 billion market cap. So there's those kinds of opportunities. But the other thing I wanted to say is that another strategist that we listen to is, I got to kill that
person.
So you have the fundamentalists at Bank of America saying, hey, the only thing that's driving this is the central banks. Ethan Harris says, there's only three things you need to worry about, the Fed, the BOJ, and the ECB. But then their technical guy, just based on technicals, is really bullish.
And that's the guy I saw.
You saw him, yes.
Yeah.
Stephen Suttmeyer. He's talking about S&P 2400. S&P 2400, well, here's his calculation. He does historical studies. He looks back at the data. He's not just looking at a chart with lines. He's saying, what has the market done? And what he found was that, so it took 300 days for the S&P to make a new high. So basically, we were going sideways for 300 days, right? Without a 20% bear market. He looked back at the history. Every time that the S&P has done that, it's gone significantly higher once it makes that second high after 300 days. So the data tells him you could have a mean return of 10 to 15% over the next 6 to 12 months. So that's why he's not saying the market is going to S&P 2300 or 2400. He's just saying this is what the historical data says is likely, is a high probability bet.
Okay, so all those investors, and it's not the institutions, but the regular mom and pop investors, a lot of them pulled their money out in June. I saw some data from Morningstar that was tracking both the mutual funds and the ETFs, and they said $21 billion flowed out of the U.S. equity funds in that month. That was the highest since October 2008. So that was basically the panic of getting out. A lot of that money, I believe, is still on the sidelines because it's not, it's flowing into back into the bond funds and all of that this month. So what do those people do who panicked, went into cash? Should they be getting back in? Or and I don't know. Like, yeah, that's why I'm asking.
I mean, and that Larry Fink talked to this. That's why he's the guy from the BlackRock said he doesn't think the market should be here, is because he's looking at these equity fund outflows that he knows are retail. He says, yeah, retail got out. And where we saw the money go in was into the ETFs, which they know because they track a lot of these ETFs and sponsor them. So, and he says that's the institutions just having nowhere else to put money. So it is unfortunate that people got out and then feel burned. You know, I sold at S&P 2000 and now we're going to 2200. And you can't just jump back into mutual funds now, because then you're going to see, you know, you're going to feel the pain of the drawdown there. But really, you have to ask yourself, why did you make the decision to sell? Did you think the world was going to heck in a handbasket in June? Because it was just really just a correction that, and my target was S&P 1950, didn't quite get there. So, you know, my timing was poor. But if it was long term money, if it was 5 or 10 year money, you shouldn't have sold to begin with. So now you really have to be a stock picker. You know, it's time to do homework and then look for opportunities to get back in. There's going to be a pullback. Yesterday, I wrote a piece, you know, when are we going to get a, you know, what's the catalyst for a 5% pullback? And most everybody was saying, I don't see one. You know, it's like nobody's scared of the election and the central banks are just supporting everything.
Are we really climbing the wall of worry right here? It does seem like it. Well, that old saying.
Yeah, but there's not that much. It's like there.
The worry's about the high, I guess. That's the worry.
What's interesting is how quickly information gets processed in the economy now and in the data networks we have. So we have this problem in Europe. It's called Brexit. They're leaving the EU. We instantly process it with, you know, nearly a double-digit correction and then reverse it, you know, because of lots of dynamics. But the point is that you can't get scared out of the market like that, especially when the first question you ask yourself is the economy going into recession? And the U.S. economy is not going into recession. So there you have that safe base to operate from. And what is the Fed doing? Are interest rates low? That's the second question you ask. Yes, they are. So you got two tailwinds right there for still being an owner and a buyer of stocks in the dips.
So what about those biotechs? Because that's one area that sold off big and hasn't really recovered. So it seems like there'd be some opportunities there if people are looking around for something a little cheaper or, you know, beat up.
I think there is opportunity there, you know, but the sector is not loved right now. That's for sure. And I think it has to do with the election, because maybe Hillary Clinton is going to pick up that rhetoric again about going after the drug companies and pricing. And so you see, like, just looking at the IBB, which is the NASDAQ biotechnology ETF, you know, I tried to be a buyer there a couple times. We made a little bit of money, but it cannot get above $275 right now. And then so you look at the components, and this one is cap weighted to the big biotech. So you look at the components, like a Gilead. Gilead is having trouble getting above $88 right now. And that is a pricing issue. You know, they've got their hepatitis C drugs. And there could be competition, but there's also this threat of, is there going to be a policy threat to the drug companies?
So should investors be looking out for healthcare stuff outside of the biotechs? That should they be looking at the insurers, the hospitals, and all of that other stuff?
Well, that's what I've been doing. I've been looking at different types of small hospitals and managed care institutions, a staffing company. I just did a report last week on AMN, Healthcare Services. The ticker symbol is AHS. They help hospitals recruit, place, and build new staff. And it's not just recruitment and placement. They're also doing consulting, helping a hospital. Hey, this is how you need to organize your staff and find the best doctors and nurses. So they're doing some incredible work. I've owned Acadia Healthcare, which is the rehab and psychiatric care. Centene right now is CNC is managed care in the Medicaid space. So yeah, there's a lot of those companies that have strong earnings growth. And so I think you want to look in those areas instead of biotech right now. In biotech, you've really got to be careful.
I know on some of the staffing companies on the medical side, a lot of the baby boomer doctors and nurses are retiring now. And that was that huge generation. And we're not really thinking about what happens. They retire, who takes their spot? And we already have like a nursing shortage as it is. And yet we're losing this big swath.
Right.
Of,
we're not ready for robot nurses and robot surgeons yet. So yeah, we still need that. That's why I really like that AMN in that area.
Yeah, that's that with the ticker AHS.
Right.
For everybody. Okay, so we've covered a lot of areas. So we've given some people some real good ideas, I feel. And not to be scared. I like to say, like, don't be scared of the top.
Yeah, and you've got to be a stock picker, especially at a time like this. Especially when the indexes are making new highs and it has something to do with the central banks driving money into stocks. You know, driving the investor. It's not that the central banks are buying stocks, unless you're in Japan, where the central bank does buy stocks.
That's right.
But in the U.S. and Europe, it's a function of the central banks are driving the institutional investor to put their money in stocks.
Right.
And that's why the indexes keep making new highs, because they have nowhere else to go. So for us, it's really time to do homework and be a stock picker.
Don't fight the Fed. Okay, so we're going to... you know, we'll revisit this in a couple months again. Hopefully it's about more highs and not back to our old story of the lows that we talked about a couple months ago. But if you want to know more, you can check out Kevin. All of his articles are on Zacks.com, and that video about, you know, how to get to the 2200 on the S&P 500 is on there. So definitely seek that out. And you can also watch or listen to our other podcasts about the lows, but I don't know why you'd want to now since we're at the highs. But if you did, you can find that on SoundCloud and on iTunes. And you can also listen to all of our other podcasts on both of those places, as well as on Zacks.com. So for everybody here, I'll see you next week.